Chapter 11. The Acrobatic Maggot.
I choose. Who dies?
Needles was worried that Alexander might grow angry over this forced condition.
Yes. With two stipulations.
Cern held up a finger on his right hand.
The first is that it must not be someone you deem deserving of death. So, it can be a total stranger, or someone you know, and anyone in between. But, if you have a grudge, or there is someone you'd already consider killing, then that will not count. I have my ways of knowing, so don't try and trick me either.
Truth be told, Alexander did not consider anyone deserving of death at the moment. Cern held up a second finger on his hand.
Secondly, if for some reason that person can't be killed, I will choose who dies. If you change your mind, for instance, or if that person is already dead, then I will pick a replacement. You only get one choice, so make it count.
Alexander was distraught with frustration as he contemplated loopholes.
I'll need some time.
Sure, it is an important decision. Just know that I'll need an answer tonight, or else I'll simply keep the object to myself.
Needles put on an expression, the best he could, to show disdain towards Cern. Time pressure hastens mistakes. As time passed by, sky darkened and clouds swam above. Wind licked and graced the grasses of the fields around. His footsteps ground individual blades of the ground cover into soil, the pace slowing as he neared the mound of human in the vast open sightlines. His heart sinking, the gun in his holster bouncing on his hip with each step, he knelt beside the deceased woman. Chief Rether spoke with an airy voice, tired of the fight within him.
Oh, Bertha, not like this.
With his head down, locked in on the remains of someone dear to him, his eyes clenched shut, his mouth open with heavy breath. Keeping composure, he directed his hands throughout his discovery, checking for wounds, signs of struggle, evidence of another person. He already knew. Bertha was a strong woman, gifted with Nen. He, in all of his years drinking and spending time with her, could never quite articulate his jealousy of this fact. She was a fighter, just like he, yet she was equipped with a weapon, a defense, against the powers he knew of, yet struggled to keep atop. It was obvious that she struggled, she fought, and yet she lost. A sound that only the chief could hear faded into perception. A soulful, melodic bellow juxtaposed against sharp, discordant stabs, angular rhythms, and a soft groove. Rether was transported back to a night, as if a nostalgic scent had riled up a memory. In one of the villages, the police were responding to a domestic violence call. Being a mere officer, he was ordered to wait for the okay to act. The tension was permeated with a song performed from blocks away that traveled through the air, vibrating the tension. It was the song in a genre popularized within a local culture. Music like it had and does exist elsewhere, but this local culture adored this style. When the residents had left their neighbors behind via a murder-suicide, the old man was unaware, singing as if nothing had even stopped time from passing into another second, then minute. Now a chief, Rether knew the man was right all along. With the shuffling of the populations, the culture all but dissipated as other cultures swallowed the spread-out locals into their own. There was no trace on Cowtip anymore, as masses left for better lives and the chance to actualize their hopes. The chief on that night had taken a walk through the area, trying to get accounts of witnesses for their obligatory paperwork. At least, that was his official reason. Instead, Rether was kicking his feet in the dirt, smelling the faint clouds he created, moving saliva from his tongue to throat, and gently positioning himself in new ways to see different stars over the roofs of the domiciles surrounding him. The old man was just a wingspan away from Rether. Wrinkles defined his face, outlined his historic emotions. The man had smiled much during his days. It was doubtful that he was still alive today. Rether only hoped a natural death, full of peace. The song warped into an ever-repeating earworm. The chief turned away from Bertha as he stood and glanced at Cimeterium from where he stood. A rare sight for him, as the storm clouds acted as a murky filter for the dreary illumination emanating from the moon above. He studied the sight, as if it was all new to him, something seen for the first time. Unending and encompassing, the song stayed with Rether as he stepped past Bertha's body. Rether reluctantly removed the strap on his holster. It wasn't taking much effort to connect the dots. The room of bodies, Bertha's death, the influx of outsiders. There was someone here. Someone powerful. With a great sense of releasing his regret, Chief Rether began walking towards the trees. Perhaps the one who called in was still out here. Or perhaps a beast was responsible for Bertha's desecration. Either way, more could be gleaned from investigation than otherwise. Through the song, he replayed his conversations with Gorrick to himself. It occupied his mind till he got near the forest.
So, was she your friend?
Rether was now accompanied by a man who exited from the cover of the trees.
Who are you? I suppose you'd want revenge for her?
You were the one that did that.
I was.
Shivra noticed the man had not a care for his presence. It made no difference to Rether.
You will have to pay for your actions.
Noticing the badge.
Is that the law or your emotions talking?
It doesn't matter.
Chief had stumbled into a feeling of peace and relaxation.
I'll have to kill you if...
Shivra was interrupted by a shot exiting Rether's handgun. The bullet blistered the atmosphere. Before either of them could move, the shot was caught by an invisible barrier of Nen. With a slow burn, the round expelled its momentum. Before it had come to a complete stop, it was returned. Rether had no time to process what had happened. However, he didn't care. In his mind, this was the best thing he could have done for the others. The bullet, now imbued with Nen and traveling much slower, struck the chief, slightly to the left of his nose. The force of the attack brought the surrounding flesh and bone with it, plastering his face onto the inside of the back of his skull. Distorted, it was hardly the same face anymore. His brain destroyed, his life gone, he collapsed back with the final bit of push given by the bullet in this state. It did not exit the back of his skull. It was arguably weaker in force, yet with a greater impact than before. The song no longer played. The memories of Bertha, drunk, laughing at Rether's cheap puns, were now churned into paste. His ambivalence towards the city, now at rest. Without being able to fight, he could at least pave the trail and give himself the respite he felt he deserved, seeing himself a failure to those around him, the woman he shared a past with, the city he tried to protect, and the force he tried to lead. He had only wished to struggle no more and let the next second, next minute pass without more failure.
It is up to Blound now,
he had thought, while ignoring Shivra's words. Shivra stood, letting his eyes study the body as it fell to the ground, coming to its resting state. Without leaving, he stayed. Another man walked out from the trees. It was one of several that had been watching him, one of several that Shivra had been waiting to be struck from. The man's voice was deepened, his neck thick with fat and muscle.
You done playing with amateurs, so you killed a cop. Now the entire force will be after you. Before you get a chance to run, I'll be the one to finish you off. I've seen what you can do, and I know I can stop you.
Shivra faced the man, who was a noticeable distance away, shouting at him. The man must have had a strategy. But before the two could engage, an athletic man stepped near. His smell drifting with the wind, he spoke, not to Shivra, but to the other man.
I somehow knew you'd be here.
Is that you? Have you come to kill me? Finish the job from a year ago?
Ha! You'll die by Shivra without me. I'm here for him. You can't take him on your own.
He had been back and forth, studying Shivra and resting in the hotel, same floor as Lahara, his body odor staining the hallway each night, lingering till morning.
This is rich! Rivals like us working together? Well, at least I know we'll be able to take him now. Then we can settle our struggle once and for all.
After this, the obese man began charging his aura.
I'll use my strongest Hatsu, and you follow up quickly so we can be done with this.
The two were standing next to each other. Shivra placed his left hand in the air. The two of them, in his view, were now between his index finger and thumb. He cocked back his right arm into a fist. Then, with one motion, he pulled his open left hand back towards himself while he punched with his right fist through the space between the thumb and index finger of his left. The obese man stomped hard on the ground, creating cracks and shatterings which spread towards Shivra. Spikes of earth were emitted from the ground all along the path. Before this could reach Shivra, his punch was fully extended, and a wave of aura blasted through the ground and air. A conical crater was formed as the blast instantly connected with both the athletic man and the obese fighter. Both of them were pulled apart by intense force. Without touching the ground, most of their bodies were turned into mist. A far distance away, a strong breeze blew counter to the storm's wind, rocking houses and shacks in the ridge floor village. Alexander and Cern did not notice as they were focused on other matters, the gunshot from before drowned out by the wind and the debris it tossed about. A man with binoculars was watching the entire thing.
He's used an attack I haven't seen before. We must kill him ASAP.
Shivra was barely in frame of his view, and the next second was approaching so rapidly that his binoculars could now only see Shivra's chest. On the other end of the line, a soldier was holding the receiver to his ear.
Scout, do you hear me? Are you there?
Another soldier closed his eyes.
He's dead.
The first soldier set the device down.
Time to move.
One of the six soldiers pulled out a map. The island was sectioned off by color on the map, otherwise topographical. One of them pulled the cap off of a marker, losing the cap in the process. He placed an X near the edge of the ridge floor village, signaling where the scout was at the time of death.
Remember, we do not interact with the locals. No contact with police either, if it can be helped. We get separated. We meet at the police station. We die. Survivors meet at the police station. Got it?
The others nodded their heads.
Good. Now, we know the primary objective is Shivra. Perhaps even more importantly than that, we do not, under any circumstances, make contact with Mayor Gray. Should we need the local police for assistance, we let them know our orders are confidential. By the time the mayor gets word of it, we'll be off the island, and he can deal with the higher-ups. Whatever you do not say a word to any police about how we got here, or who sent us. If all goes according to plan, we recover the bodies and leave the island without a trace.
The UPIO military was well known for being overfunded. Due to the government's knowledge of Nen, certain military departments were constructed for the sole purpose of specializing in Nen-based combat. These soldiers combined traditional military equipment and tactics with unique Nen abilities. The few politicians in the know consider it a very controversial decision, but can't deny the efficiency. No single politician is fully aware of every time a squad of this division has been employed, for they are primarily used for special operations and secret branches of larger-scale deployments. Their existence is often rumored within the military's normal sects. On the internet, their existence is often laughed off as conspiracy, as Nen isn't common knowledge, and superpowered soldiers is given the label of crazy or silly. Many of these labels and comments are spread by the government themselves, purposefully leaking the info on sites with poor reputations, and then let the public decry any possibility of the leaks being real. The easiest form of disinformation they found was simply to leak the truth and display it as untrustworthy, letting people form their own critical opinions and thus not feeling swayed. With this done, even the few times a real leak or evidence was discovered, it would be buried just the same. Each of the soldiers in this unit were well-trained marksmen, as well as knowledgeable in enhanced close-quarters combat, in similar ways to Dread Law. Each of them possessed complementary hatsus and expert toxicology materials to deal with killing Shivra Nial in a plethora of ways. No explosives were brought with, as keeping a low profile was necessary for the mission. They all had various rifles and handguns, each with high-grade suppressors, the knowledge of which wasn't even known to speculative filmmakers or general military personnel. Just as the cheap action movie would be derided by knowledgeable peoples for the unrealistic suppressors never wearing, most of the military spread these criticisms like the conspiracies mentioned before. However, this was only done as the standard military had no idea of the high-grade equipment available to the secret operations units. Specialized methods were taken to create suppressors, which would last much longer than normal ones, but they numbered so few that they were saved only for key missions. Each soldier's weapons were equipped with these enhanced suppressors, rifle and handgun each. The soldiers were ordered to destroy any equipment they'd be forced to leave behind. A sprinkling through the air turned into raindrops. The clouds were dark, and though the sun was down, some light still shone through to illuminate the sky. Within an hour, this light would be gone. Xaxa had limped through the front door of the police station and began scanning the many faces of people occupying the room. He spotted a familiar one.
Candy, I have something to tell you.
His breath was shorter than usual. Perhaps it was the injured walk to the station. Perhaps it was the stress of the incoming emotion that he expected. Kasumi took note of Candy's reaction to Xaxa's presence. As Candy arose, Kasumi nodded to assure her that it would be okay to end their interaction on this note. She walked past Zero and Gorik, whose conversation had stopped with this arrival.
What are you doing here, Xoxa?
Can we step outside for a moment?
Xoxa and Candy stepped outside. Just as they left sight, Zero turned his focus back on Gorik.
Do you think you can help me?
Gorik wanted to know what was being asked.
Tell me what you are wondering first.
Zero then began to illustrate to Gorik a similar weave which he shared with Cern at the bar. Gorik's eyes widened and shifted as he moved from point to point, mentioned his lack of memory, his tattoo, and eventually his escape. Outside, Xoxa was trying to formulate how he'd break the silence.
What is it, Xoxa? Why'd you come here?
She has no idea.
He thought, never one to dance around his obstacles.
Whisk is dead, Candy.
She stood there, a harsh tingle quickly traveling down her body. Her feet felt unusually sore in this moment. She hadn't been standing long. Her nose flared with each breath, which seemed to switch from air to some form of gas or smoke with each consecutive inhalation. Each exhale grew more shaky than the last.
I don't like your humor, Xoxa.
Even I wouldn't joke about this.
Don't.
She wanted to continue, but she didn't know how to phrase what it was she wanted stopped.
He came to get me. But then we ran into someone who needed help, because Shivra. And he saved me.
Why did he go? How could he be gone?
She was trembling, trying not to let the dam break in front of Xoxa.
He came to get me,
he repeated.
Because of you! Why couldn't you do anything to stop him? Why did you have to be hunting Shivra?
She was angered by his calm demeanor.
Yes, you are right.
He was seemingly unfazed by anything.
It was my fault. I know that. He'd still be here if it wasn't for me.
Candy backed up to the wall and slowly sat down.
He wasn't supposed to get you.
Whisk was looking out for me. He was worried.
Don't talk like you knew him so well.
Candy's eyes were reddened with sorrow.
He can't be gone. He can't be. I was talking with him earlier, and we were going to meet back up.
He sacrificed himself. I think you should know that.
He drifted in volume with each word.
Shut up! I don't want to hear from you! Xoxa, I...
She wanted to say she wished he was dead, but her sadness wouldn't let her.
I know.
Xoxa was quiet.
I should have died instead.
Don't!
She turned away, tears warming her cheeks in the moist, chilling air. Sprinkles were tickling their senses as they stood close enough to the building for shelter. No drop could touch them. There was no mistaking the wet path leading down her face. Xoxa had nothing else to say, so Candy continued.
Don't belittle me.
Xoxa thought she was misconstruing his replies.
I'm trying to help. I just don't know how.
You can start by caring.
She wouldn't face him.
But I do.
He sighed a passionate breathe.
Whisk was kind and wasn't afraid of me. He was accepting.
The moment of Whisk's death flashed before his eyes.
He was a friend.
Candy had no words to reply. Xoxa had nothing left in him of worth, he felt. So he left Candy to grieve under the roof as he wallowed away, broken in the cold. He wasn't wandering anywhere in particular, yet he directed himself back out of the city. Candy was now alone against the cold wall of the police station. She drifted into silence as her eyes burned. The strength leaking from her body like steam in the cold rain, she laid on her side, face against the ground.
I just wanted to talk with you some more. To see you.
Her vision was blurred. Her memory of his face didn't seem detailed enough to recall his features. This was even more painful than anything Xoxa had said. The murky filter over her eyes, the dulled senses took in the dark gray sky as the silent fear of losing all taste set in. The color, the spice, all vibrancy, gone. No music to speak of or bed to lie in as the porous ground transferred heat from her face to the abyss that was the earth which now housed Whisk's body. Yet another minute passed, and another. After enough time had passed, she got up, a part of her still in disbelief. With all her remaining might, she began walking, increasing speed till she was running. Kasumi had just been coming to check on her to see her get up and run off, eyes firmly shut. Confused and concerned, she went back in.
So, Gorik, You think you've heard anything?
Gorik was thinking hard on his numerous conversations while in the UPIO.
I met this journalist who was looking into some kind of conspiracy type thing. Honestly, I thought he might just be crazy, but it does seem kind of familiar. He knew about Nen in depth, so it stuck with me. Said there were Nen experiments that he was looking into. I did an interview as part of a cold case special, since all my cases were closed, and one of them was about a string of kidnappings. That's when this guy first got a hold of me. He said he thought he knew something about that. Met him once, we talked, he drank a little, then left. Didn't see him again, didn't try to.
How long ago was this?
Maybe a year, year and a half.
Can I maybe get his contact information?
I don't remember that. Don't even remember his name. Supposedly he was a part of some online publication. They switched from physical to internet-based.
Smart move.
Gorik smirked.
Yeah, lanky guy, dirty blonde hair and a kind of baritone voice. Smooth, almost like a singer you'd find in bars with a resident live band. Guy reeked of coffee.
Zero was etching this into his memory.
I'm guessing you don't remember which publication?
Nah, sorry about that. There's just too many of those that fit the bill. Plus, it's impossible to remember every detail. You never know what'll be important in life later on.
That's true.
Zero stepped aside for a moment to try to piece together what little information he had. Kasumi was waiting for them to finish.
Gorik, that girl that was in here, she seemed familiar to you?
Gorik hadn't the chance to notice her.
Didn't see. Maybe?
Well, she must have left, but she gave us quite a bit of information.
She was walking Gorik over to the spot where she took Candy's statement. A few feet away, Maxwell was now talking idly with Officer Saf. With Officers Emirat and Riob in the hospital, Saf was just occupying his time till he heard any news from the others. The hospital was quiet. Officer Riob was sitting in the hall, sleep-deprived. Officer Emirat was unconscious inside the room. Below them, in the building, Dahlia was slipping into slumber due to exhaustion, physical and emotional. Lahara was still sitting beside her as Anya and Virgil were waiting outside the room, letting Lahara spend time with her friend. Curiosity drove Lahara to leave Dahlia's side as the two were now under the control of their tiredness. The ex-noble left the room to confront the man and woman lying in wait.
She's asleep now.
Anya cared more than Virgil.
What was your name again?
Lahara. You two seem close.
She closed the door so as not to wake Dahlia.
We've bonded here.
Virgil was keeping quiet, aside from sharp comments.
Don't you want revenge?
As Anya let Virgil know that he was out of line, Lahara responded, unfazed.
I do want to see the one that did this to her.
Anya's phone rang. She stepped away, angered that she was just getting to see into the mind of this friend of Dahlia's. She knew who was calling, though. Without a word from her, the voice commanded,
Come to the police station.
Before hanging up. She put the phone away and returned to Virgil and Lahara.
We need to get to the police station.
Virgil nodded. He understood why. Law was demanding their presence. Worry was not absent, since the two of them were involved with a particular incident. He was unsure of just how much Law knew. Their battle was with an audience, but it wasn't clear if Law saw the whole thing or if he could see every detail. Regardless, Anya could tell that time was running out.
Why don't you come with us?
Virgil pined.
We're actually on our way to meet the people who are going to find the person that did this.
Whether he intended to use Lahara to scope the place out, or to use her as a hostage if the police recognized them, Anya did not seem to object. She wanted to put Virgil under stress. A fear of being caught could be useful. Either way, what excited her most was to record the fears of anyone hunting Shivra, especially Law and Virgil. They both knew the police wouldn't be too much of a problem. The only issue is drawing the law's consequences to themselves or others, which needed particular planning. Having Lahara join them, they might be able to avoid discovery in one way or another. Law seemed not to care if he did know the truth, and if he did, he seemed to think it would be fine to go to the police station anyways. Regardless of the situation, the two of them held no fear of going, though Anya hoped that would change. Lahara was hesitant.
Sure, I'll go.
Strong and independent, she wasn't immune to questioning just how much she could trust a stranger, even if they were friends of a friend. The bar came into view as Candy sprinted for the entrance. She slid in, wet with the rain, causing a minor stir in the few that remained, despite the recommendations to find shelter. This is the only shelter I know, many of the alcoholics declared. The bartender was surprised to see her again, but his presence was ignored. She found her way straight to Hon Cronus, drunk, and no more than a few feet from where they left him. She was still trying to convince herself of a different reality.
Hon, have you seen Whisk?
He jumped, even with his dampened reflexes.
What, that guy?
Yes, tell me you've seen him.
I did. He came in with you earlier. Guys, wanna talk to me?
He burped with his mouth closed.
After that, did you see him again?
Nah, haven't.
She sat down.
He was coming to tell you something.
Well, he must have forgot.
Candy was distracted by the scent of booze.
He's gone.
Yeah, that much I figured. Men tend to do that, you know.
She rephrased.
He's passed. No longer with us. With...
Hon set his current drink down.
Oh dear, I didn't know. Didn't mean nothing, no. I was just making talk.
Candy, seated near Hon, was having trouble bringing herself to talk. The physical action of vibrating the air using specific muscles and shaping of her body seemed to require too much energy, more than she had left in reserve. Mindlessly, she spoke out.
Your friend is dead.
It was as much a statement to herself as it was to Hon. Drunkenly.
Ah, I've come to expect that as the outcome. Seemed to be what happened, I guess.
The booze had harshened his mind, not only limiting the physical sensations he could feel, but also the mental ones. As Hon picked his drink back up to sip on, Candy reacted to her own words.
I didn't even get the chance to know him.
And how do you know someone?
I barely knew anything about him.
But that's the thing. Any two-bit acquaintance can read a paper and know everything about a person. To know who that person actually is entirely different. When you are with someone, you feel, see, hear them, how they think, how they are a person. Not just their history. The details are one thing, but the life is another.
Candy was surprised he was keeping coherent, not just the alcohol in his body, but the perceived shock of the revelation that his friend was no longer alive. She thought it heartless to ask.
We all grieve in different ways,
he said as he finished his glass.
But don't think for a minute that you didn't earn the right to grieve. It really is a privilege missing someone.
Candy leaned back. She could feel the tears now pooling in her eyes as her head rested against the wall. She didn't want to move. She didn't want to even think. The only thought passing in her mind was,
the wall is cold.
Hon pushed at her back as if to help her stand.
Now go on. I can't have you here while I drink myself to death.
Are you going to be okay?
Candy wasn't sure if he should be left alone.
You just worry about yourself right now. It's okay. No one will blame you for not thinking of others right now.
He hobbled up to find the bartender. Candy left, feeling a little bit lighter. Maybe the weight loss was water exited through her eyes. It didn't matter. The world lost another kind heart and was, as such, harsher than just a day prior. The wind blew, the rain fell, and the sun would be visible again in the morning. To think such a thing was both a horror and an inspiration. His feet trudged through grass. His nose flared with the scent of rain. If a scent could echo, the rain found a way to create such an anomaly. Bruises covered his legs, as did bandages. Aches filled him with the occasional reminder of the final moments of a person he now realized he cared for. Xaxa found himself confused. Emotions were not a topic of ponderation for him, not often. It was a swift reminder of his childhood life in one way or another. The relationship he had with his emotional well-being was despotic and one-sided. Before he discovered how to live a life as he was, he felt a slave to his frustration, though he hid it well when with his brother. Saxa wished there would be some way he could convey to Thazith just the kind of person Whisk was. If only they could have met, then the feat would be unnecessary. A friend and a brother. The world of influence Xaxa cared about had doubled and then been slashed in half within as much time. Xaxa's journey to visit his brother most recently at the prison where he was held had taken more time than his stay on Cowtip. It had been a while since they last spoke. His walk was dominated by thoughts of the emotional deluge that Candy was experiencing. It was getting dark past the point of easy vision. The clouds managed to block light while the sun was up, but as it escaped from view, the cloud somehow managed to reflect a dim hue, brighter than the empty blackness of the night sky. The raindrops were numerous enough to create a slight haze over the ground. Winds occasionally created bends in the lines formed by the falling water as they traced paths from the sky by following gravity to a place where they might finally rest before re-entering the oceans and evaporating to repeat continuously. Up ahead was the makeshift resting place created for a friend. The softened dirt was now being turned to slush as it was being packed in by the weather. Atop the location where Whisk now lied, a lump was observed by Xaxa. It was a careful walk. Cautious and slow was his tempo. Injured, he was in no condition to fight. Upon closer inspection, it became clear that it wasn't human. A beast was lying down on top of the mound of fresh dirt where Xaxa had buried Whisk's body. The cautious cannibal inched towards the mysterious creature, seemingly asleep in the rain.
Shanaga!
He shouted, instantly displaying his thoughts as they entered into his mind. Shen opened his eyes, but did not move. It was an almost comforting sight to see him so relaxed.
So you survived.
He went forward to pet him.
You must have followed my arm back in this direction, until you found Whisk.
The rain dampened his words.
But without anyone to feed from, you entered a slumber.
Xaxa sat down with Shen, who was not moving any more than a slight headshift to acknowledge Xaxa's presence. Shen's fur was soaked, matted down, and clinging to his body. The mud was tangling with the fur he rested on. He knew that Whisk was beneath him.
No matter how long you wait, it won't change. It can't change.
He fumbled for his phone and dialed. After extensive ringing, Liban answered.
Hello?
Liban, I have a question.
Oh, Xaxa, it's you. I need caller ID.
Can a living thing that is conjured continue on after someone dies?
Hold on. You mean a living thing was conjured? That alone is impressive. Must have had some creative conditions. I would have assumed manipulation was also used, as is the case with most organic material that is conjured, though there are cases of personalities also being conjured. It would take some skill with Nen to pull it off, though. Now, what was your question?
What if the person who conjured that living thing then died, but the conjured being lived on?
Well?
There was silence.
I've heard of Nen becoming stronger after death and being influenced by emotion. Like the reverse of a Nen curse, maybe it allowed life? Another possibility could be the conditions or commands of the created being, like requiring or wishing it to live on. I can't say for sure, but I'd love to take a look at whatever you've got and let some associates take a look. Experts with special talents for understanding what they see, if you know what I mean.
Xaxa was staring at Shen.
You want me to bring him to you?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Xaxa hung up. Liban, miles away.
You still there? Okay then. Bye.
He put his phone away.
Can't anyone say goodbye anymore?
Xaxa then tried to coax Shen to stand up, but couldn't with mere force. Shen may have regained the ability to feed, but he wasn't trying to stand at all. He wanted to rest there for longer.
Come on, Shen. I need you to get up.
Shen did not move.
I get it. You miss him.
Shen turned his head away from Xaxa.
So, do you blame me too?
No movement.
Fine, waste away. But you are going to need someone with enough aura to keep you going.
Complete stillness.
Let me at least do that. Whisk is gone. That's on me. Okay, you don't go and squander what you still have now. I'll be the one to feed you. You won't have to worry about taking Nen from anyone else. It is my burden for you, all that he's left behind.
Shen lay still, though Xaxa knew he heard.
Now, before we go anywhere else, let me take you to someone Whisk cared about.
Shen looked at Xaxa.
Yes, she's sick with pain.
The dog stood up.
I can't move very well. But you can take us both. We just need to make one stop first.
Shen transformed and let Xaxa climb on slowly, wincing from his wounds. Kasumi jolted to see who was walking through the door. She expected Candy, but instead two men waltzed into the station. Everyone, from Maxwell to Lamino, all took notice. Law and Jeremiah had made their entrance.
I need your attention, please!
Law bellowed with a rich voice as he was verging on booming to make sure he was heard. When pushing your vocal cords, it is easier to lose the emotion and intended tone in the translation. Law was attempting to alleviate this problem with careful wording. He pleaded,
"There is something I need your help with."
Gorik abandoned his conversation with Zero and approached Law. Zero followed behind him, not for any particular reason. Jeremiah strolled by Lamino, pondering the situation.
"If you'll come this way, I'll take your statement over here."
Gorik felt like there was already too much on his plate.
"No, things are going to be a little bit different. I'm going to defeat Shivra, and I want your help."
Kasumi came over to them. Jeremiah was unfazed, continuing his walk around the room. Maxwell wasn't sure what was going on, but Officer Saf seemed uneasy. Zero recalled the name, as he had been hearing it more and more.
"I'm sorry, sir, but you can't just come into the police station and do that. We'll be willing to take your statement, but..."
Kasumi wanted to defuse any tension as soon as it arose.
"I'm trying to finish this before anyone else dies."
They were all silent. Finally, Blount stood up, feeling like Gorik and Kasumi were doing too much for their station despite being outsiders.
"All right, I'll listen to you."
He left his paperwork behind.
"But first, you'll need to tell us who you are."
Jeremiah took this opportunity to speak up.
"He's a survivor of an attack from Shivra. He saved me as well. Shivra killed our companions, very disrespectfully."
Gorik and Kasumi looked at each other. Things were falling into place. Blound returned a volley.
"We're going to need some proof that you aren't Shivra. We can't just trust anyone that comes in here."
"So, you mean to tell me you don't know what he looks like?"
Law was losing confidence. Jeremiah pulled out an ID. Law followed suit to please Blound. Relief set on the detective, as did it the private investigator and the accomplished woman. The air in the room was growing hotter with each body, increasing in temperature the longer the people walked and talked. The smell of paper was fading into a cocktail of colognes and odors.
"So, Mr. Law, what do you have planned?"
"Simply, I want all of your cooperation."
Blound looked back at Saf, then Gorik and Kasumi, who all seemed curious enough to allow the detective to follow his judgment.
"Seeing as how the chief isn't here, I suppose I'll give you the answer."
He paused for thought, but couldn't think of many reason for or against the proposal.
"Sure, you have the CPD on your side."
"I'm in, too."
Zero excitedly spoke. Law was looking pleased.
"Right. Now, some others are on their way to join us."
He signaled to Jeremiah to wait outside for them.
"I'll just need one more thing from the police."
"What's that?"
Blound couldn't postulate what he might be asking for.
"The man you have in custody, the one who could generate a room. We'll need his help, too."
Even Lamino, in his barely conscious state, was shocked to hear this request. Gorik thought it important to mention,
"We haven't yet done our follow-up interrogation on him."
"I saw the fight. Is there any reason you believe he'll just be more trouble?"
Blound wasn't sure, so he deferred back to Gorik and Kasumi. She spoke out first.
"Honestly, he just seems to be a bit misguided. He feels like we're the antagonists and that he was the righteous one. To him, the police are like a poison to Cowtip."
"Look, we can't just release a suspect because you said so."
Mild irritation permeated Blound's words.
"I'm going to level with you. He's small time. Shivra is a result of the government. Do you know what that means? It means that they are going to try and fix or erase this. They will make sure this information doesn't spread. I wouldn't be surprised if they had already sent a team here to deal with this. Time is an important factor. The only way we take him down is with collaboration."
Once again, his voice was elevated.
"Jeremiah and I know firsthand what he is capable of. And to deny the only real opportunity we have to take him down would be sentencing more people to death. If you truly want to protect the people of this island, you'll help me and be done with this."
After a brief silence,
"He makes a decent case. I trust Kasumi and she feels that Tolver isn't a threat."
Blound was coming around to the idea.
"What do you plan to do with him, Law?"
Gorik was biting with his curiosity.
"What needs to be done?"
"Even kill him?"
"If I have to."
Another pause, which was only broken by Zero.
"Did you say the government?"
"Yes. Don't know the full reason why, but they're the ones who put out this invitation to get rid of him."
Zero was now certain that his next move would be to find out what happened to Shivra, as it might have answers as to his own past as well. Gorik whispered to Kasumi.
"We have to go with these guys. We need to make sure we get to Shivra first. I'm not joining a mob to murder someone."
She replied in a similar volume.
"So we take him into custody, and then what?"
I don't know. He's powerful and we might wind up putting ourselves against some of these other people here.
Isn't there a prison?
I've heard of one. For Nen users. The hardest part is making sure they don't kill him. Everyone deserves a trial to face the consequences. Dying relieves them of that.
I don't want to be a killer either, Gorik.
Kasumi sounded concerned that they might not have a choice if they help Law. Blound could overhear part of their conversation.
Okay, Law, but if we're going to help, we take him down our way.
Of course.
Law fully intended on ignoring this promise and killing Shivra with his own hands when given the opportunity. Jeremiah re-entered with Anya and Virgil.
They're here.
Slight fear struck Virgil as he wondered if his mancatcher would give him away, especially to Lamino, who was having trouble staying awake. Anya noticed this tension and reveled in it. Before anything could happen, Jeremiah sought to prevent a mess from developing. He did the first thing that came to mind.
This guy looks a little sick.
He pointed to Lamino.
Should he be out here like this?
Saf, take him back to rest. He's no good to us now.
Blound commanded. Disappointment grew in Anya as she barely felt any fear from Virgil. The other cops knew nothing of him, nor his abilities. Law was certain of it. With Lamino and Saf away, the room was a little less crowded, though still full, as some people began taking seats. Lahara weaseled her way in through the back. Anya and Virgil had intended for her to lead the way, but this plan was foiled by Jeremiah, who'd rather bring in those he knew first. He planned to let them introduce Lahara. None of them did, so she stepped up.
I'm Lahara. I want to help find Shivra.
Law accepted her greeting, an earnest handshake and a fake smile from the both of them. Sadness was Lahara's reasoning, but Law's was disinterest. It didn't matter to him who came along or who they were as people. All that mattered was what they could offer to the objective.
We'll take all the help we can get.
He turned to Blound.
Now, where's this Tolver at?
Blound shrank a little. Shen returned to normal size as Xaxa and he arrived at the hospital. Xaxa reached down and used Ian to keep Shen out of sight. The two of them calmly entered through the front entrance. Quickly they made their way to the elevator and proceeded to take it down to the bottom floor, where Xaxa would be able to find some dead bodies. Luckily, no one else entered the elevator, else they may unintentionally bump into Shen. Exiting, they overheard two nurses discussing something.
She treated her wounds on the spot.
While in that much pain?
Yes, it's impressive.
She has the potential to grow into a real professional someday.
Hard to be a surgeon with only one hand.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Real shame.
Xaxa and Shen snuck by them to the unattended bodies. He didn't need much. He pulled off some meat from a random body and stored it on himself after taking a bite.
Do you want some, Shen?
Shen was unresponsive, so Xaxa released his Ian and watched his reaction. Upon offering, Shen denied him.
Jeez, you take after Whisk, you know that.
Xaxa was alluding to some of Whisk's personality being injected in along with the recreation of his old pet's original personality. Both of them fell into a momentary sadness as they thought of Whisk. This was interrupted when the two nurses began walking towards the room Xaxa was stealing flesh from. As a reflex, he turned Shen invisible again and began crawling with him to the door. It was a painful wait for the nurses to fully enter, wondering if they'd notice the chunks of people missing or smell either of the two waiting near the door. They didn't give them much of a chance to react as they bolted out the door and to the elevator at the first chance. The elevator was once again cramped, even without other people, as Shinaga was a large dog, even in his normal size. Shen was seeming a little confused as they took the elevator up higher than before. When Xaxa overheard the nurses talking, he remembered someone else he wanted to talk to. The two of them strolled down a hallway to a certain room by memory. Xaxa was surprised that no one was there. Inside, Dahlia was barely awake after an uncomfortable nap. After closing the door, Xaxa released his Ean. The sight of Shen didn't disturb her. In fact, seeing Shen seemed to make her somewhat at ease.
Hello.
She was quiet.
I wanted to tell you something.
He noticed she wasn't responding in the usual way he expected.
First chance you get, leave this island and go here.
He handed her a paper with information written on it.
It's an acquaintance of mine. He'll help you in ways the doctors can't.
All of them were silent for a moment. She wasn't sure how to react, and he didn't know if his presence was required any longer. With a shallow nod, he returned to using Ian on Shen and left. Dahlia felt a little sad that Shen was gone now, but had a newfound curiosity in whatever lie at the end of the path Xaxa was apparently sending her on. Leaving the hospital was no problem, and Shen grew once again to accommodate Xaxa as they hastened their travel towards the police station. The ridge floor village was quiet, even with the death at the end of the area's boundaries, where Shivra had killed an apparent military scout. Alexander and Cern were none the wiser. Not even Needles had noticed, as the rain and wind muffled his senses, which were already primarily focused on Cern, whom Needles couldn't be certain wouldn't still try to pull off a surprise attack. Alexander was in too much internal turmoil over his quandary.
"Well, you need to make your decision tonight, or else I'll choose for you."
Just after he finished saying this, Cern's phone rang. Stepping away to take it in private, Alexander's rang as well.
"Hello?"
"Alexander!"
Lahara was very energetic with her speech, startling the tailor.
What is it?"
"Something terrible's happened to Dahlia. I need you to come to the police station at once."
A few feet away, Needles was listening in on Cern's call.
"Zero?"
He spoke to Cern with a calm tone.
"Whatever you're doing, I think I found something exciting for you. At the police station, we've got a chance to fight Shivra."
Xaxa had just arrived at the station. Inside, Law had been directing everyone to call for assistance. Shen and the cannibal went almost entirely unnoticed.
"Where's Candy?"
Xaxa asked of no one in particular. Kasumi responded,
"I thought she was with you."
"Well, I guess you can now tell that this is not the case."
Law interjected.
"I'm Law. Nice to meet you."
He reached out under the assumption that Xaxa would reply with his own introduction.
"Isn't it, I'm the law, Mr. Policeman?"
Gorik decided to clarify for him.
"He's not a policeman."
Xaxa was confused.
"Then why introduce himself as one?"
"My name is Dreadlaw."
Xaxa's confusion went away. Embarrassment was not something he felt.
"Oh, I'm Xaxa."
Law was too concerned with getting down to business.
"Now, if you'll make sure to take a look at what we have going, I'd love for your input. You're here to take down Shivra, aren't you?"
"Shivra, no. I'm not going after him again. I'm here for Candy."
"Well, there's no candy here, I'm sorry. But if it's food you want..."
Law was the confused one this time.
"I eat people, but I'd never eat candy."
"Not one for sweets, I take it?"
"Candy's not sweet. She's spicy, if anything."
Now it was Kasumi's turn.
"Law, Candy is a girl that this man knows. She was here earlier."
"Oh."
Blound headed out while Zero was laughing at all of them. With the detective was Tolva, reluctantly coming along with him.
"I've got him for you."
"Great."
He was pleased with Blound's cooperation. Jeremiah took to the whiteboard, erased some things to the slight chagrin of Blound, and began writing. Law explained what he was doing.
"For my plan to work, we all need to be on the same page. Here's what we know. Shivra was taken in by the government. Due to some kind of experimentation with men, he achieved a great strength. Somewhere along the way, he managed to escape, or otherwise put distance in between him and the UPIO's governmental program that created him. He seems to have come here for the ease of escape from the island. The government wanted to take him down, but it seems as though only some sects of the government actually are privy to what is going on. It is secret, even to the UPIO politicians. So, they decided to give out an invitation to get rid of him, without needing to cause suspicion with the other sects of the UPIO."
"What was his name again?"
Lahara seemed to be onto something.
"Shivernyaro?"
The answer came from Jeremiah, trying to feel useful.
"That name is familiar. I saw something about a family with the last name of Nial when I was checking through the island records."
"A family?"
Law was not expecting to think of a possibility of Shivra actually being a person and not merely a target.
"From what I read, it seems like the Nials lived in the Ridgefloor village, but the only known remaining residents seem to have died some time ago."
They were thinking the same thing, but did not want to vocalize it. Shivra was returning to Cowtip to try and find his family, but must not have known that his mother was dead. According to the records, it seems as though he lived with her before leaving. Whether or not Shivra knew she was dead was a speculation. Perhaps he was just coming to pay respects after he learned of her death. Either way, Law knew they couldn't afford to humanize him if they were really going to hunt him down.
"Either way,"
He continued,
It doesn't matter why he's here. If you take a look at what Jeremiah has written on the board, you can see that we've identified several details about him.
Alexander entered through the door, which all but Lahara ignored.
It would behoove us to make sure we understand what worked and what hasn't in past encounters. Jeremiah's written his abilities out for you.
Saxa added,
I think it is important to say that he is an enhancer. I fight best in close quarters, but this isn't possible with Shivra.
Cern entered as Lore replied,
Me as well. I'm a hand-to-hand expert, but this couldn't be used against him, mostly because of his abilities.
Whatever you do, don't let him hit you bare-handed,
Saxa clarified.
I agree.
Lore led off of his information.
His abilities seem not to be able to do enough damage themselves to kill, unless there are specific applications of it. When he moves in for the kill, you'll do it with his hands.
Blonde looked around, taking in all the people now occupying the station, which was a building much too small for this amount of people, as it was intended for the minuscule CPD force to use. Gorik and Kasumi were concerned over the collection of personalities so far, worried about internal conflicts. Tulva was an interesting point of reference for them, as they weren't sure if he would attempt to escape. Candy quietly walked in, which Kasumi noticed before Xaxa. Law was now realizing he only knew much about a few of the people in the room. This could be troublesome.
I'll need to go around and ask you all about yourselves. By that, I mean what you are capable of,
he declared to the room. Jeremiah started.
With my ability staring contest, I can lock eyes with someone and force them to look at me until I blink. My ability monkey see, monkey do. As long as they agree to trust me verbally, they will be forced to mirror my every movement. My other ability, Jeremiah says, is my strongest. Both monkey see, monkey do and Jeremiah says require me to have them locked down with staring contest first, but Jeremiah says needs me to touch them also. While I am touching them, I can issue a verbal command that they will have to follow.
I don't believe we'll be using much of your abilities, though,
Law remarked.
I know.
Anya felt like she was supposed to go next.
I can force a state of fear onto people.
She wanted to remain vague. Virgil then felt as though he was expected, but wanted to make sure not to incriminate himself in the process.
I can use this weapon here.
He held up his man-catcher.
And manipulate it, even using it to fly.
By association, Lahara next felt the urge as she stood with Anya and Virgil.
I can generate armor that makes me practically invulnerable to physical strikes.
Law's eyes widened, contemplating if she would be impervious to Shivra Nial's physical attacks. Alexander then went forward.
I can control threats. I also have several men-infused materials on me to use.
Cern was about to go after Alexander, but he was beaten by Zero, who was waiting for Alexander to finish eagerly after hearing Lahara's description.
I can also create armor for myself. Different armors on a timer that give different abilities. Speed and flight, or strength.
Cern followed Zero immediately.
I can create a mirror image of myself, but I also have poisonous knives.
Leaving out any mention of Death's briefcase, which somewhat annoyed Alexander. After hearing Zero go, Gorik wanted to add himself into the pool.
I can control my handful of revolvers simultaneously.
Of course, Kasumi went, naturally leading off of him without skipping a beat.
Achilles and Gaia are two people I can conjure. I also have a rifle that I can create.
Lore excitedly.
Yes, I saw you in action earlier. You two were quite impressive. Abilities and usage of said men.
Feeling obligated, Blound, in a monotone voice.
I can track things or enhance the bullets in my handgun.
Several people were looking around the room, seeing who didn't speak. Law spoke for Tulva.
This man, Tulver, I believe it was, can generate a room out of nothing.
That's right.
Tulva applauded.
What about you, Cannibal?
Law was especially curious after hearing he had already encountered Shivra.
I already said, I'm not going to help with this.
Candy, soaking with rain, angry with grief and frustrated with Xaxa's response.
My name is Candy, and I can increase my leg strength, speed, and all with an ability. I can also blind or disorient someone with a burning, spice-like aura.
I've heard about you, miss,
Law commented.
Fine.
Xaxa sounded defeated.
I'll help. I can control my limbs after they've been severed. This is Shinaga. He can grow in size and strength easily.
I have a question,
Maxwell shouted from the corner.
What is it?
Law felt like the question was directed at him. It was.
Why should we help you?
Several people, those with revenge on their minds, were angered by this. The police felt like they had no choice but to help, for more altruistic reasons. Law came up with an incentive.
I'll pay well. Did I mention that there was a reward for taking him out?
Maxwell was currently out of a job again.
Okay. I can use my aura to sort of make these different components. Each one acts differently, like reducing aura, increasing aura, detecting aura, turning other components on or off, you name it. Can even come up with a contraption to steal aura if you want. Just depends on how hard it might be to set up.
Once again, Law liked what he heard.
Yes, I think that will come quite in handy. What was your name?
It's Maxwell.
Excuse me.
Tulver shouted.
Don't I get a say in my involvement?
That's up to the police.
Well, I suppose we could negotiate down your sentence if you help us with this.
Blount spoke out without thinking.
Great. Just one thing. I need my friends with me. I know Miles is here. And was that my friend Baruka I heard earlier?
The police were silent.
Your ability will come in handy greatly, but theirs might not.
Quick was Law with his verbal assistance of the police in this tried situation.
If I'm so needed, then you should really listen to my requirements. Miles can move things and people towards himself. Baruka can force Setsu with a simple touch.
Jeremiah was visibly elated. Law smiled for the first time that Jeremiah could remember.
That would be very useful.
Blound reluctantly assured Tulver they would be brought up momentarily. Gorick was displeased with Law's command over everyone else. Law then described some of his abilities.
I can burn away ore in a variety of methods. Now, if you'll all take a look at the board.
He redirected back at what Jeremiah had written.
You'll see Shivra's abilities. Patsuwon is what we'll call it. This is a sort of passive orb surrounding himself. It protects him from basically all attacks, and I assume will prevent anyone from actually touching him. It regenerates faster than I can burn it, and I'm assuming the same of your capabilities, Maxwell. Hatsu, too, is his primary form of attack. It seems as though he shapes his men and controls it with a combination of physical movements and thoughts. If you see him swinging a fist or stomping his foot, be careful. It is too hard to tell what shape the attacks are taking, but you can easily tell from where they come from. They aren't as strong as his physical attacks, as I saw when we fought him indoors, where the attacks did little to the walls, despite colliding with them, yet he could jump straight through the ceiling. It is because of this ability that we will attack him with plenty of room. To encounter him otherwise would be detrimental to our health.
He smirked.
The bad thing is that he hides every use of men with Ine. The good news is that it appears as though he can only use one Hatsu at a time.
You're missing one.
Came a voice from a man who had entered while Law was talking. A man equipped with full tactical gear was standing just on the inside of the entrance to the station. Everyone was surprised to see a soldier in the station. Before anyone else could question him, he went ahead to explain himself.
My team's been wiped out as of a few minutes ago. I'd like to blame it on the rain, but we've trained for environmental conditions like this many times, and succeeded in many missions with worse conditions. I survived. We weren't ready for what he was capable of. But we need to act fast. If they don't get a completion report from someone, they'll take more drastic measures.
Law suspected as much.
What can you do?
My ability is related to my sniper rifle. I left it outside so as not to startle the police. I wasn't expecting to see a lynch mob being formed.
His choice of words was off-putting to the police, who were already uncomfortable with the objective.
So, you're a sharpshooter? I think we may have that role covered. Sorry.
Law made sure to not make a habit of trusting those affiliated with the government, especially under circumstances where they are the cause of the problems he faces.
I can fire rounds that have different effects, such as stun, poison, fire, ice, you name it. Think of a blow dart expert with all kinds of different rounds for different situations. Now imagine that was a sniper rifle instead, and with an infinite supply of rounds.
Fair enough. So, you said we missed something?
This was the real information Law wanted.
We'll call it Hatsu 3.
He walked over to the board and began writing below what Jeremiah had written.
He aims it with one hand, an open palm. Then, he fires it with a punch through the opening in his hand, like this.
He mimed the attack Shivra had done earlier, which had killed the scout, and then been used on his team on their counter-assault.
Tough to say how it works, but it must fire off a horizontal column of pure Nen, like a blast. It is devastating. As I'm sure you've noticed, most of his attacks work by giving his aura physical properties, probably hard like stone or metal. But this one, it is more like tiny shards shredding people apart than a solid surface.
Law wanted to know more, as this was not good news.
Do you know if it operates like Hatsu 2 in that it negates Hatsu 1?
I would assume so.
Gorik quipped.
We shouldn't go into battles with assumptions.
We don't really have a choice, it seems.
Jeremiah countered, while also thinking of the dangers of not knowing everything about the enemy, particularly through memories of the massacre his team had suffered by the hands of Shivra. The soldier moved closer to everyone else.
I don't think I need to mention that all of this is classified information. And should you share this information, there will be consequences.
Few seemed to care about this revelation, though the words wore heavy on the conscience of others. Law interrupted the silence.
Now, who is the fastest one here?
This was answered by Cern.
I believe it is Alexander. He could travel the island much quicker than anyone else I've seen here.
With this in mind,
concluded Law,
I have a plan to take down Shivra. There will be three teams. The assault team, the trap team, and the strike team. The assault team will attack Shivra first and keep him occupied while the trap team prepares for the most important stage of the plan. After that, the strike team will move in to finish it.
The trap team won't need to be distracted from... Shivra will only attack those who attack him,
Xaxa confidently declared.
Is that so?
Law didn't notice this, as his previous attempt at taking down Shivra happened so quickly, and with everyone attacking together, that the possibility that he might not have attacked someone was lost on him.
Either way, to prevent Shivra from learning of the trap, and to eventually lead him into the trap, the assault team must fight Shivra with everything they've got, if they want to survive. Try and kill him then and there if you can. The trap team will utilize Tolvar's ability to create a room to trap Shivra momentarily, alone inside. Anya will disorient him as much as possible with her abilities. She will fill it with smoke to infect him with fear.
This was something Law observed during her fight with Virgil, though the others didn't remember her saying as much.
Then, when he inevitably escapes, or once we break down the room ourselves, Alexander will carry Baruka straight to Shivra to force Setsu on him. As we mentioned before, getting in close is extremely difficult. With his own attacks alone, it is almost impossible. Disorienting him is our best bet. The next obstacle is Hatsu 1, which might prevent anyone from touching him. That is why we need to make sure to have Baruka land a touch while Shivra is attacking someone else. This way the orb will be down. Then we can deal with Shivra easily. That's what the strike team is for.
Just one thing.
Tulva sounded a little skeptical.
The effects of Baruka's ability will only last about 5 minutes.
That should be plenty of time,
assured Law.
What are the teams?
Blound wondered aloud.
I have an idea for that as well.
Law pointed to each person as they were mentioned.
Armor guy and girl, the sniper, Miles, spicy girl, cannibal, dog, and Virgil will be assault team. Tolvar, Baruka, Anya, Alexander, and Maxwell will be the trap team. Poison Knives, the police, and I will be the strike team. Also, anyone who survives on the assault team should back up the strike team when the time comes. Same might as well go for the trap team.
Wait a minute. What do I do?
Questioned Blound, offended.
You will lead us there. Jeremiah will assist the trap and strike teams. Miss,
he faced Kasumi.
Your conjured warriors will be best on the assault team, I believe. Objections?
Alexander took up the offer.
Yes. I believe I will be better off on the assault team, or setting up the trap, considering my other abilities.
Anyone else pride themselves in speed?
I may need a warm-up, but I will be able to reach great speeds with my ability, step by step.
Great. Then you're the one carrying Baruka.
Hold on, Candy. That's too dangerous,
pleaded Chaksa.
Oh, so now you worry about the risk someone else takes?
She knew she was doing a poor job of keeping hidden the detail that this position would leave her closest to Shivra once his Nen is gone, meaning she will have the first shot at taking him down. Xaxa planned out how he could keep defending her, even at a distance. Law finished up.
I believe Virgil should use his flying ability to take the sniper up to a floating vantage point. Perhaps Maxwell and I would be best doing what we can in the assault team to try and weaken his aura as much as we can, to allow the trap team to better enact the plan. Then we will also join the trap team, and I will then move to help the strike team end things.
Make sure you all get a decent rest. We want you up to full fighting ability tomorrow, once the rain ends.
Jeremiah shouted as the various people broke off into their own conversations. Then he turned to Lore.
I didn't know you were the leader type.
I'm doing exactly as Rafa did, but I've learned from his mistakes. The reason everyone followed him is the same as why they are following me. They have their own reasons for defeating Shivra.
Law, I know I'm not much help. Truth is, I guess I'm not cut out for a fight. Suffice it to say, but I'm retiring after this is all through. A quiet life's the only one I want anymore.
A few feet away, Xaxa was trying to talk to Candy.
You know he wouldn't want you to risk yourself like this.
But he's dead. He can't say that to me now, can he?
She was repeating the similar rhetoric he used before. Xaxa had no reply to her after that. Lahara had just caught up to Alexander.
Alexander, Dahlia's been hurt. Shivra, she lost her arm.
That's terrible. Where is she?
The hospital right now. Those two over there told me she was saved by a man. I don't know who, though. I thought it might have been you.
I wasn't there. I wish I was, but I had no idea she was doing such a thing.
This dress. I feel ashamed to wear it right now.
Don't be. Wear it tomorrow against Shivra.
He leaned in to whisper to her.
It will strengthen your abilities. Don't tell anyone else, but it is made out of special materials that will enhance you.
Why not make clothing for everyone, then?
We can't trust these people. We may be allies now, but that doesn't mean things will remain that way when Shivra's dealt with.
Without skipping a beat, Cern broke up their private communication.
Alexander, I'd like to talk with you.
The tailor nodded to Lahara as he left with Cern to find a spot for them to converse uninterrupted.
Tolver!
Shouted Baruka, who Blount had brought out. Gorik and Kasumi had let Miles join the others as well.
Baruka! Miles! You don't know how good it is to see you both again.
Tulver was a little bit weary of what was being asked of them.
Way to get yourself captured, Baruka.
Miles angrily played with his friend.
There was a strong woman. You weren't there.
Blound overheard the description of Bertha and, by extension, thought of the chief.
We need to let the chief know what is happening.
He told Gorik and Kasumi, who silently agreed, themselves distracted by their moral dilemma. Both of them wondered how to detain Shivra with a limited amount of time. They also wondered how they would deal with the rest of these people who might turn on them if they prevent Shivra from being killed. As Candy strolled away from the reunion of Tulver, Miles, and Baruka, she experienced a reunion of her own.
Shanaga!
She shouted with glee as he jumped up to lick her.
I thought you were gone as well.
Tears dripped from the corners of her eyelids. Shen empathized with her, turning to a more somber expression and stowing his excitement while licking her face, trying to erase the tears as they fell. Cern and Alexander had found a quiet place to discuss their matters.
Keeping your friend a secret? What's the matter? Don't trust anyone else?
Cern was referring to Needles. Meanwhile, Needles had been moving around, analyzing each person, taking note of the discomfort Virgil was feeling, and the excitement that was Anya's reaction to his discomfort over being so close to people he'd wronged.
I'm keeping him a secret for the same reason you keep that briefcase a secret.
Well, on that subject, have you decided who will die? And no, Shivra will not count.
I have.
He sounded down, but he knew what he would say.
You may kill whomever kills Shivra,